Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Well, Stacy Brown Jr., welcome to the show. Long overdue, man. So thank you. So we are here to discuss both Bigfoot and the paranormal. Now, for the most part, we are going to cover your newly released film, The Skunk Ape Experiments. Now, this is part one, and I did get an advanced screener for the entire thing. Thank you for that. And of course, at the end, I'm like, wait, what happened to RPG? Well, I need this information now. But, you know, part two. And from what I heard, part three will be coming out. So now it's heavy on Bigfoot, obviously, thus the name, Skunk Ape, but includes other things. And I don't know how much you want to go into your background, but just really quick, a snapshot for people. If you don't know who Stacy Brown Jr. is somehow, he was on Bigfoot Bounty, Finding Bigfoot. He's part of, or I believe probably the founder of Outcast Paranormal and the Brown Thermal Footage, very famous footage shot with his father, Stacy Brown Sr. And if anybody wants to look this up, it's from 2012. And I believe that Cliff Berrickman, you know, he had gone out to the location in person, and correct me if I'm wrong, Stacy, but I think it was Bobo that he put in that spot, in that very same spot, he found it and he got the camera where it needed to be to recreate that. And Cliff himself said that the figure is clearly much larger than the human who stood 5 feet 9 inches, and it's much bulkier in comparison. And we're not here to talk about that thermal footage, but I just want everybody to go check that out because it's extremely interesting and compelling footage. So anyway, long-winded, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. This is like the one podcast that has just escaped me. It was harder for me to get on Into the Fray than it was Coast to Coast.
Well, that just makes me sound like an ass, doesn't it?
No, that makes you sound busy. This is like an accomplishment for me.
Oh no, so, man, that goes the other way. That's totally my fault. I'm very, very proud to have you on today. It's going to be a fun talk.
Yeah, for sure. Not throwing you under the bus. I went through a phase where I was like, I'm not doing no more of these podcasts. And so I didn't do none for a while. Because how many times can you tell like the same thing? Or because, you know, you'll get like, the way it goes, it seems to go, is you'll get like 30 in a row. Everybody will, they'll see you on one podcast and then want you on all these other ones. So for a while I stopped, but then I was like, you know, I haven't been on Into the Fray. Let me hit Shannon up. And then you actually responded to me the first day. So
yeah, I was excited to see
it. It wasn't hard. It wasn't hard. I was just messing with you. That's how I do. So I tease people. That's probably why I got no friends.
So yeah, no, as far as going on other shows, I'm much the same way. I'm kind of like a sighting of Bigfoot if I get on a show, because I feel like I do a podcast. So do people really need to hear me talk even more? And like you said, you're just kind of telling the same stuff over and over. And not that I mind. It's not like I'm rolling my eyes the whole time I'm on somebody's show. I almost always have a great time, but I feel the same way. So right out of the gate, I know you've had two sightings so far in your life, right? And maybe you've had one since. If you want to go into that, maybe I'm not aware of. But was there something about your two sightings that made you want to explore the other side of Sasquatch? And that's what this doc is about, right? It's about Bigfoot, but it's about dabbling into some other stuff and taking into account some of these strange reports that we've heard about Bigfoot. So where did this idea come from to do this?
Okay, like my Bigfoot sightings I've had, nothing about them was paranormal. It looked like a normal animal. Everything about it was normal. It didn't like all of a sudden get quiet everywhere. The one thing that happened was this creature was able to walk up a hill and I didn't hear it. And that bothered me. But then again, I could have just been into the conversation that I was having at the time and just not heard it. But when you sit back and look at the Bigfoot community and you look at the different sightings, because some are flesh and blood and then the other half are this paranormal thing, and then you look at the fact that we haven't gained any ground, why have we, if it's flesh and blood, why haven't we really gained no ground in the last 60 years? I guess the only thing that we've learned is they can see in the night. You know what I mean? Like, they can see at nighttime. That's the only thing I learned from my footage, because the thing was looking at us from behind a tree. So that should bother everybody. And they need to look at, you know, my opinion on it is, like, some of your major groups, your Bigfoot groups, they'll omit stuff like the lights. They'll hold back those other encounters. And that's, to me, that's wrong. You're like diluting the data if you do that. You know, we don't actually have true data. Oh, they're like, oh, we got all this Bigfoot data. No, you don't. Not if you've left stuff out. And so our data set isn't something that's viable, like, to use, because we leave things out. And I'm going to be the person that explores all of it if I have to be the only one that does it. Like, I'm still looking for this creature as if it's flesh and blood. But I'm also doing these other methods because what am I hurting? First of all, it's my time. You know, these people are claiming they're seeing something and I want to try to figure out what they're seeing. Maybe they are. Who am I to tell them that they're lying? I mean, it's no crazier than the other half of the community that's saying they've seen an 8-foot tall hairy man running through the forest. Like, that is crazy too. I don't know if the Bigfoot community looks back on it and some of these researchers, I don't know if they look at that and be like, okay, well, that's pretty nuts too, you know? But then they'll say, oh, you've seen light, so that's crazy. I can't deal with that. It's kind of like a catch-22. So that's where it came from. I wanted to just explore everything and see if it is something else, especially after talking with my buddy Les. He spoke with him telepathically, and I believe him. Like, I know he's not crazy. He's Canadian, but he's not crazy. That, I was just like, okay, hey, they never spoke to me telepathically, but let me open my mind and see what these things are. Then after my dad died, I started kind of diving into the paranormal. And I started noticing a lot of similarities between, like, the paranormal field and Bigfoot, the things that they experience. And it made me, it's like, oh, okay, hey, well, you know, maybe they're all connected. Maybe the Bigfoot's not flesh and blood. Maybe he's a spirit. Maybe these are spirits of some ancient species that we are seeing in the forest. I have no idea. But that's the underlying thing. Or I guess that's the main point of my research is I have no idea what these things are. I'm not claiming to know what they are. I'm trying everything.
Well, yeah, and for you to say that Les Stroud was kind of the catalyst, I can understand that, because Les Stroud is not someone who needs more followers or downloads and all this other stuff. And in fact, for him to say, to even bring up this telepathic side of things would make him actually less popular to a lot of people, right? So if that was the goal, to get more attention, you'd get more attention just probably staying in the flesh and blood camp.
Yeah, you know, he got there being himself, right? Like, his whole thing about, that's what I admire about him, is like, he did it his way the whole time. He was never in it, and like, hey, we're going to do this because, you know, we got to meet some little PC checkbox or something like that. You know, he went for it. And so he's not that person that's looking to revive himself. He's going to be himself. And if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I mean, if I just met him like once or twice, I may not put all of it in there, but like, I know him quite well. And like, he's done some things like, okay, so I guess I'll tell the story. So we filmed The Pit, right? This movie I wrote, sent him the script, he did it. And then him and my dad became, you know, they were having some good conversations, hanging out and stuff. My dad died the day after we filmed, we got done filming. He died the day after. And then like 3 days later, this package shows up from Les to my dad. And it's got every single thing Les has ever done. CDs, books, DVDs, all of it, all the Survivor Man swag, and then, like, you know, a note to my dad. And I was like, you know what, it was heartbreaking to get, but it was like, damn, dude, you didn't have to do all that. And he didn't know that my dad had passed when he sent it, because he was like, you know what, I'm going to send you some stuff, kept his word. My dad was excited about getting the things, you know, and then they showed up, and my dad passed away, so that sucked. But it got a lot of respect from me in that. You know what I mean? As a person, I guess. Maybe I'm rambling at this point.
No, that's actually a really nice story. That was nice of Les to do. And I'm so sorry about your dad. That's a horrible thing to go through. No, nothing can prepare you for that.
No, but you know, out of all of it, it made, like I said, it made me respect him. So when he starts saying these things, like, hey, no, seriously, dude, they were in my head. They were talking to me in my head. It's like, okay, hey, this is the one concrete encounter that I got of otherworldly stuff. And so if he's right, then there has to be something to it. If I believe him, I have to at least start exploring these things and may have other abilities.
Well, and, you know, in the UFO crowd, it would be like the CE5 folks, right? Going out and they're getting their energy up, and they're smacking their arms and their legs, and they're pretty much calling to the UFOs, and they're claiming that it works, right? It's some kind of a subconscious thing and tied to consciousness, and that's a word that you see splayed across all of the subjects, actually, that people are like, you have to look more into this side of things.
And I just don't understand why people don't, you know, because, like, the movie's out. The report, the reviews are like hit or miss. If some of these blowhard, diehard Bigfooters, they're flesh and blood, and that's all it is, and everything else is silly. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. It's like, why can't you just open your mind to the possibility? Because you don't know. If you knew, this wouldn't be a thing. You know, we go to the Jacksonville Zoo and look at Bigfoot. If you knew what they were, if we had a leg up, that's the thing. We have no leg up. We know they exist, or we believe they exist, I guess. And then that's it. Besides that, we don't know nothing about them. We're assuming they eat deer. You know what I mean? We're assuming they do these things. We have no clue. Who has actually viewed a Bigfoot and like got footage of it, like Jane Goodall style, and actually studied it? Nobody. We don't know. So I don't think it hurts anything, you know, and I wish more people would do it. When you look into the other parts about it, with the UFOs and with the ghosts and stuff, there's a lot of Sasquatch similarities in all that, at least the behaviors, like the knocking, for instance. The knocking, that's something you do on a ghost investigation. You knock on the table and you get replies. We're just taking it to the forest and banging on trees. You know what I mean? And then, like, the red glowing eyes. That's like a thing that demons are all about. And, I mean, I could go on, but there's a lot of similarities there. And so I felt it was worth investigating. And it's super fun. It's just it because every time I seem to get an answer, I get more questions. Mm-hmm. So it's a rabbit hole, and I got into a different one.
Yeah, you did, but it is fun. And this doc was so fun to watch, by the way. Okay, so I've had the same experience, granted only once, but I was up in Washington State, and I'm there for Bigfoot on an active property. It was the Brown property, and I'm not going to go through the whole thing again. People have heard me tell it so many times, but, you know, you're out there for Bigfoot, and you see a damn light, and for me, I was like, is this really freaking happening right now? I was almost pissed. I was like, no, you know, because I don't want them to be paranormal because I feel like we won't really ever figure it out. I just, that's how I feel. So maybe therein lies the answer. There you go. Like you said in the very beginning, something else seems to be going on here. But yeah, I've been there where you're out for Bigfoot and Bigfoot doesn't show, but these other things do. Now, something that I brought up on my very last episode, it's not out yet. It's out for Patreons, but, I just, because they have also seen lights, and they saw one just last year, spider crawling in daylight hours, which is incredible to me. But they've also seen lights in that area. And I just thought, you know, if the lights and whatever else weird is going on out in the woods is also sentient, why couldn't they choose to mimic or choose to be like, hey, look at all the attention these hairy jobbers are getting over here. Like, we need to be over here with these fools knocking on the trees and doing the thing. You know, I don't know if it goes that far where they could or would mimic Bigfoot activity, you know, running or knocks or whistles, but it's not impossible.
No, not if you're talking about this. Everything's possible, you know? So that's another issue with it is that, okay, let's say the Bigfoots and some of the paranormal Bigfoot activity are, you know, two different things, but it's just one's copying the other. You know, like a demon. A demon would come to you as whatever it thought was going to let you let it in. So maybe that's a child in your house. This thing's coming to your other children so it can gain some attachment. But if this demon can figure out that you're out there looking for Bigfoots, why wouldn't he come to you as Bigfoot? It's a rabbit hole you could spend months on and still be lost. But like when Alex and Eli came out, we were hearing the knocks, and they were so shocked that I was in the woo camp, I guess. You know, they kept asking me questions off camera about it and just having me explain things or how I viewed them. But then we were hearing knocks, and then this light showed up. And it's always funny when you see somebody who doesn't give that any time of day, and then, you know, they see it. Like, it's the same thing when my dad got the footage. My dad believed in Bigfoot, but I don't think he believed in it like that. Because when he got the footage, it changed his world, and he's like trying to talk himself out of it, you know, and all that. And they go through this whole like denial phase because in the moment they're like, wow, that was amazing, blah, blah, blah. And then they start trying to rationalize it and they struggle. And it's really amusing to me. I love that part of it. So,
yeah, Seth did the same thing, you know, after his fairly recent sighting where he jumped off the moving Can-Am. He's like, I almost broke my damn leg, you know, but he jumped off because he knows that was a Bigfoot. He finally saw one. But he was the same thing as your dad, just trying to talk himself out of it. So which Beyond the Trail, what's the title of your Beyond the Trail with Alex and Eli?
I think it's Sunshine State Sasquatch.
Okay, I'll make sure to look it up and link it. But and sorry, I should have done that before I hopped on with you, but I'll make sure that's in the show notes for people to find. Okay, so let's talk about the doc a little bit. It takes place in several different locations. You go to the Aleister Crowley Museum, and you are in Mayaca River State Park, of course, in Florida. You're out of Florida. So, and I'm not going to give a whole bunch away about this doc, but, you know, a few things that stand out to me is that you have almost like a Skinwalker Ranch type of a neighborhood. You have this neighborhood that's got all this super high EMF, so high that you can hear it on the audio, which I thought was really cool. And you have a gentleman that he feels that he has been cursed by this, by sighting skunk apes in the area. Did you guys know about that aspect of it before you sat down to talk with him?
Yeah, I actually known Roger since I went there for the first like Myakka River State Park video that came out. I met him there. He had been having encounters on his property, and like he had been finding these mice that are like wrapped in grass, you know, and he was the first person to ever tell me that, and the only person. And then like a few weeks ago, I heard of another report, or there was a BFRO report, and the guy had pictures of it and stuff. But so yeah, you know, he was having this activity, and then he got sick, and he was another person that thinks they were like in his head at times. All the neighbors were having activity as well. They were all seeing these Bigfoots. And so I've investigated that place since 2013.
And that neighborhood's next to a wildlife sanctuary, right? And one of the neighbors saw an 8-foot tall creature.
Oh yeah. Well, there's probably still 6 or 7 people in that neighborhood that are still alive that have had sightings within 15 yards or less.
Oh, geez.
Like they open their back door and it's going through the trash, or they're walking the road and it's right there in the marsh, or they're walking their property or driving home. Like it's, and it always tends to be like they'll go through these periods where they'll have sightings for like 3 weeks and then there won't be nothing for a few months. It's almost like the Sasquatch move in and eat all the food that's in the area and then they'll move out. Also, this neighborhood, these people, they're not the kind of people that you can just go up and knock on their door. You know what I'm saying? This is like old Florida. This is the Florida I grew up in. You know, it's like if you're on somebody's property, you are going to get shot. I mean, if they see you, you're going to get shot at. And so you have to, it makes it extremely annoying to kind of navigate getting these stories, because you have to be introduced, brought up there by somebody, and then it's like you're bringing a cooler full of oysters so they can sit on the tailgate with you and bullshit, you know what I mean? And then they tell you their story. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it's more work, but then once you get these people, because to me, talking these people into being on in this documentary was an issue as well, because they don't want you to know. Like Lynn, she was gonna do it, but then like she wasn't gonna do it, then she told me she was gonna do it, and then come time to film she was gone, you know. So you could tell my story, but I don't want to be on camera. Like, and to me, the people that don't want that fame, that don't want to be on camera, they are the most credible. You got to track these reports down, you know, because you've always got those people who are making stuff up just to get their 15 minutes of fame. But yeah, this whole neighborhood was like that. They didn't, it's taken me, I mean, I've repaired chicken coops. I've planted gardens. I've changed tires. What the hell else have I done? Clean campsites up. Like, I mean, just in this neighborhood, I've done stuff to win these people over so they would tell me their stories and then keep me on speed dial and call me if they have something going on, and building relationships, I guess. And this was a neighborhood that I put a lot of effort into because I felt it was like going to be fruitful one day. Like I will get answers out of there.
Well, and you were right about that. So since 2013, you've been cultivating these relationships out there, and just enough to be trusted.
Yeah. You know, just to get their info, to let, you know, so it wouldn't be weird if I'm like, hey, you know, I was thinking about coming up Thursday. I'd like to camp at the back of your property. You mind? And you're, no, come on, man. I'll have dinner ready. And blah, you know what I'm saying? Now you're friends with them. And so the doors open a little bit more easier. And I had a whole neighborhood there. So that the whole film is basically stuff I've cultivated over 7 years. The Crowley Museum there. That's also like a Skinwalker Ranch place because they have UFO sightings, you know, a lot of paranormal stuff. There's Indian mounds on the property. You know, then they got Bigfoot encounters as well.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next. But yeah, I'd imagine if you showed up to one of these backyards unannounced, I don't know who the hell you are, you're going to have a couple extra holes to breathe out of, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You're going to be bleeding and leaking and all. You know, it's going to be rough because these people don't play, and they're not the ones that are going to call the law. So
right.
People go missing sometimes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's one of those things. You walk up to the door, and if it says, we don't call the cops around here, then you don't screw around.
No, you know, and that's a lot of that. People, like when you watch the film, you don't know those things. Like you don't see the relationships that have been built, which is kind of, I wish there would always be a behind the scenes, because it's the same with all this stuff. You know, people have had to, how was it making the film, you know, doing that kind of process. But it's very easy, because especially like Roger took us over to the sanctuary. He's very protective of the sanctuary. So I had a lot of people that were in the area, right? Knew, you know, I had a lot of film people there, and Roger didn't like that. Like one of our cameramen had to go take a leak, and Roger's like, don't go far. I need to see you. I was like, oh shit. Okay.
Yeah. And he wasn't messing around, because he told you guys you're playing with fire. Like, he wasn't exactly a huge stamp of approval as far as your safety goes, as far as what you guys were up to.
No, you know, because you see these things that he claims. I mean, it's skin cancer is what's done all that to him. But he believes, you know, whether he's right or not, I don't know. But he believes that it was because of the Sasquatch. And if you haven't seen the film, when you see this man's face, it's so bad, it's hard to argue.
Yeah.
That's what you believe, dude? Yeah. All right, man. I got you.
Yeah, it's actually pretty shocking when you see his face. I, on the onset at first, before you kind of get a little closer, I thought he had actually been in a fire.
Yeah, and then you see that's just all from cancer.
Jeez.
All from skin cancer. And you wouldn't think. You see these people out at the beach looking like the damn hot dogs at Circle K. You know, they just like leathery. It's like, oh my God, yo. This stuff can get you, but he straight up believes, because I want to say he's seen him 7-8 times there on his property, just sitting on his back porch and walk up in the yard.
And within 15 feet, I mean, you hear something going through the garbage. You're like, goddamn raccoons again, you know, blah, blah. You look out and you're like, well, that is the largest, most screwed up raccoon I've ever seen. I mean, to see them that close, that's got to be life changing, even just once.
Yeah, and he said he'll know if he hears something going on and the dogs ain't raising hell, that he knows it's them. So he's only seen them a handful of times, but he's at the same time experienced. You know, he knows they're there, because the dogs are like, they'll get dead ass silent or whimper.
Mm-hmm. They go hiding somewhere.
They're just in their cage and they're all huddled up. So he's got signs like that. And then he gifts with them. He gives them like guts and stuff like that. You know, because they kill a lot of animals. His son, you see at the beginning of the film, we're like catching this hog and putting a collar on it and releasing it. His son is like a professional hog hunter. So they go through a lot of gut piles, I guess. You know what I mean? And he has a certain spot he always takes and puts them for the Sasquatch. And whether the Sasquatch are getting them or not, he does. He believes it, because, like, he'll find stuff there. You know, they'll leave stuff back for him. And a feather can fall anywhere, you know what I mean? But at the same time, hey, you have to, this is what he believes is right. Going on. Who am I? You know, who am I to tell him he's wrong?
All right, so I lied. I said we were going to Crowley next, but let's do Mayaka before we get there, because Crowley will lead into another portion of a chat, I think, here. But something, you guys went out basically a night investigation. There are several of you guys out there, and I just kept cracking up because RPG, Ryan Paul Golembeski from Finding Bigfoot, of course, he was just not having this, dude. He was not happy about this situation. And then you, at one point, are standing there and you're instructing them, hey, if a gator gets a hold of you, here's how you're going to take care of it, okay? And not die, basically. And RPG is just like, man, screw you guys. Screw this whole thing. I kept cracking up at that part. That was a quick aside I had to say. I love that portion.
Yeah, he's a Yankee, you know, and that's fine. But he's not from Florida. He's a transplant, and he's trying to become a Florida man. He didn't like that part of it because, like, I didn't really tell him we were doing that it was going to be that big a deal. And of course, we had done walked down to the water, and there were like 17 big gators right there. He got really uncomfortable with that, you know, and once I sensed there were blood in the water, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm on tease. So, like, I had the whole crew just on him constantly, like, somebody walk up and be like, you know, they spotted a 20-foot king cobra out here 6 months ago. He's like, what? A king cobra? Yeah, dude. People let out all kinds of animals down here and then just walk off and leave him with that. It was like a mind game the whole time. We're just getting in his head because he's already a little nervous about it. He doesn't like being in the dark, and he doesn't like being in the dark by himself. You know, while we were doing something serious, I wanted to showcase a little bit of comedy, a little bit of fun, because, like, it's a group of friends, so we're heckling each other, we're teasing each other, and it's pretty much nonstop. Like, if we didn't edit it the certain way to show a serious side to it, it would look like an episode of Jackass.
Well,
right?
Well, yeah, but that's why I love that some of that stuff got left in there, because that is what happens on these film shoots. I've been there. Your friends, this kind of shit goes down, and it's funny, and you have to keep it lighthearted at some points, right? You just have to, and it just bleeds in anyway.
I mean, it's going to happen. That's who I am. That's who most of these people I hang out with are, and so it's going to come across, but we're able to kind of keep it serious, you know what I mean? Like, we're doing something serious, but yeah, the whole part about explaining what we were going to do if something went down, he had a hard time dealing with that. He was like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever done. I'm like, man, we're only in like 3 feet of water.
So, like, you'll be fine. Just hit this one little tiny, tiny spot on his head here. You'll be in. RPG's just.
I was like, well, dude, we're in a line of people. We will all grab this gator.
Yeah.
Because that conversation was actually like 12 minutes long, and we sandwiched it down because he kept asking questions. What's going to happen? What if a gator grabs me and starts turning? It's like, well, somebody's going to hold it still, and I'm going to stab it.
Yeah.
And we'll right get here. You to the hospital.
You're like,
no big deal.
You're like, we will likely get to you in time. As long as nobody falls on the way to you, we'll get there, I think.
Yeah, well, at that point, if you get grabbed, then you really actually see who is about that life. Because the people are like, yeah, I'll help you out. Yeah, right. I bet half of them dudes that was with me would have bolted.
You're like, I tripped on my shoelace, you know. You're like, yeah, sure, dude.
I was going to help you, but I had this camera in my hand, dude. There was really nothing I could do. I couldn't drop the camera.
Damn, this thing, you just disappeared. I couldn't even see. I could hear you, but I couldn't see you for nothing. You were the gator that was rolling you into the water. Okay, so last thing I'll say about this segment is the fact that a lot of the guys got really turned around out there. Well, not a lot of them, but a few of them did. And that was something that just, it seemed strange to them. And of course, it comes across to the viewer, right? That this is something that should not have happened.
Yeah, you know, okay, in all fairness, these guys have done this with me before. Most of the people that were there, we did this same thing in 2013, and we had an encounter. And that's basically why we went back to Myakka. And it's not really explained till the second film. But you see these people that are in the woods with me all the time get turned around. And now here's another thing. Like, they all had their GPS. We were all walking to a certain dot, and there was just like one area in there that they basically just all walked around. They should have walked right through it. They should have walked all through it, but they all walked around, and like RPG and Emmett are on the beach side. They go out and around. The other guys that were after them, the other like five or six guys, they only go in the woods a little ways and then all come out in the same spot, which is where I started. It was so strange. I was like, what is going on? Like, how did y'all all get turned around? This ain't, you know, I mean, in all fairness, it was dark and it could have happened, I guess. But it was awful strange. You know, I felt they knew how to do that better. You know, if it would have been other people, if it would have been like a team of RPGs, I'd have been like, oh, of course, we all got turned around. This is the first time you've ever came to the woods.
Right.
But not these guys. You know, I mean, the cameramen were always following somebody who is from Florida, who does this stuff with me all year long and has been for years. So what happened? And I think it really puzzled everybody.
Well, and the GPS, this whole reason for being just epically failed to everyone. That's very strange.
Right. And there's not great service there, but my GPS worked. You know what I mean? It's like, I didn't have a problem.
Well, somebody but, just likes you better, Stacy, you know?
Well, I just didn't understand it. Like, it made no sense to me, especially like all these guys know when they walk in the woods to look where the moon is and look what time it is. So in case they get turned around, they at least come back out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that was something we all talked about before they went in the woods and they all got turned around. So it was strange. You know, it honestly felt like something was keeping us from going in that one section. You know, it looked like it because there's just a section of those woods that we just kind of all circled and nobody went through it like they were, because it was supposed to be like a search party. You know what I mean? It was supposed to be a line of people coming through the woods like a search party would. But those woods are also like super thick, you know, palmettos that are over your head and you can't hardly see. So I guess, but being fair about it, it would be easy to get turned around. But the one argument I have for that is just the guys that got turned around. It's not something that should have happened.
I imagine you guys just send RPG random gifts of like a massive winking gator or something, right? Like, poor guy.
He comes out. This dude, I'll give this one part away. This dude carries, I don't know what he thought it was. I do know what he thought it was. He said what he thought it was, but he carries this thing out and it's a damn dried pig turd that he is toted through the woods thinking he had found something. And that was a pretty funny part. And he like the other guys, we came out of there with like a whole alligator skull and stuff. So I mean, they found stuff, but it was just wasn't Bigfoot stuff. RPG thought he had some kind of finger bone or something. I don't know what the hell.
Yeah, I was waiting for him to lick it. I was like, don't put your tongue on it. Don't do it.
Oh my God. You can't give that guy a camera in like alone time.
Oh my goodness. Like, yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what I'm going to call Black Phillip and the Crowley Museum. What's a little bit of background on this museum and where is it located?
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so this museum is actually only probably, it's less than 10 miles from where we were at when we were doing the thing in the state park. So it's a little nature center. Crowley Museum and Nature Center. Okay, that's the name of the place. But it's like 90 acres protected land right off the Myakka River. There's Indian mounds there, like I said. They've got like an Indian village built in there. A lot of kids take like field trips to this place because there's these old Florida houses in there. Like people used to live in Florida. A whole bunch of animals. So they could come on a field trip or something like that, you know, and learn a lot and, you know, have some fun at the same time. But there has just been a number of Bigfoot sightings there over the years. I mean, it's right on the river right there that runs through the park, the river that we crossed. It's right off of that river. So it makes sense because the Skunk Ape reports, they're not far from the river. They're never that far really from the river. So we you know, another relationship there because they're a nonprofit. We've held events. It'd be like a Bigfoot trip. You know, people come out and have 20, 30 people at a time. One time we had like 120 people. But they'll come out there and they'll pay to camp and go Bigfooting or ghost hunting with us. And that money goes to the park in exchange for us to have access to that thing anytime we want to. So we'll do so many events to raise money for them so we can like come up there and go squatching, go ghost hunting, film a documentary. You know what I mean? So it's another one of those like relationship build things. But that's I didn't know at first. I just thought it was Bigfoot reports, but there's so much other stuff that goes on there. So it made it it's made it one of the, I guess, cooler places to investigate in that area.
So to you then, it was kind of a no-brainer to utilize this location for, you know, kind of this next iteration of experiments for this doc?
Yeah, I had taken Finding Bigfoot there. One time, and you know, we had Knox there, and usually at Crowley it's good for at least some Knox and a few lights, right? Like you can see lights there. It's not a real like issue. I mean, it's like, oh, I hope we see the lights. It's like, ah, you got to pay attention. They're going to be around, you know? So I was like, cause you want stuff to happen when you're filming, you want to give yourself the best opportunity to have some of this stuff that you've seen, that you've claimed has happened. You want to, you know, give yourself the best opportunity to document some of that. So it really was a no brainer.
Yeah. And you guys, it was actually really impressive to me because you just keep adding to the list of things that you're going to try there, and really, why not, right? Like you're in the Crowley Museum and you guys have all these not only do you have the electronic devices there, you have a psychic, there's, you know, she's using dowsing rods. You guys actually, you start to employ a chant, which we'll probably get into a little bit more, and you also have a doctor on site. And I don't know how much you want to get into that or just leave that whole thing for the most part for folks to watch. And I kind of do, but I'm just wondering if RPG drew the short straw on the mirror gazing part. And you know, we don't have to go into the other half of that mirror gazing part and what he did to assist.
Well, we can talk about it. Okay. It's all good because I could tell what happened and you don't really get the experience unless you watch it.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, go for it.
So we felt we needed to get as much energy. If we were going to try a spiritual Sasquatch type thing, we needed to go to a place that was like that, and we needed to create as much energy as we could. So we have a psychic there. We have me downstairs doing this Aleister Crowley ritual chant. Up above us is RPG doing mirror gazing. And so basically what's happening is that the psychic is there to help facilitate opening the portal. I'm doing a chant that's going to open a portal RPG is staring into a mirror, which a lot of people believe in the paranormal world that mirrors are actual portals to the other world. And on top of that, we gave him mushrooms to stare into the mirror, so maybe that would help him, you know, get us a message from the other side. Yeah, you know, maybe make them give us something that would, as outlandish as it sounds, give us something that would help us in our search. So called on a Greek deity, did that, and then on top of that, we had another device that a guy named Patrick Jackson in England, he built, and he believes Bigfoots and like ghost sightings and all this are caused from artificial intelligence. He said we have these Foo Fighters that are all over the place, and they're extracting DNA, and then they're transmitting it back. And so if you get close to one and they're transmitting, they will put off a projection that scares you away, whether that be a Bigfoot or a ghost or whatever, you know. But his device would raise the energy in the air, bring these Foo Fighters, you know, we could then see the Foo Fighters. So basically his device is going to call in orbs, right? What he's claiming. So we figured we would try everything, you know, in hopes to have some activity.
So the reason I brought up Black Phillip, of course, was because livestock actually starts to act very strangely when all this is going down.
Oh yeah, the goats, they get out of their pen and they come and sit in. They're trying to get in the house, right? But we won't let them in the house. So then they come up and they just sit right up under us. And like, we had to call the owner we had to call Dixie, the lady that runs the place, because the cattle broke out and were circling the house. And I'm talking about a lot of cattle, and they're running really fast, and they're just doing circles around the house. And it's like, oh my God, what is going on? And well, you know, I guess that's what was going on. It, like I said, the whole evening was weird. What you see in the first part of the film is basically us setting up and us starting it. In the second part of the film, you get to see the conclusion, and it is like, it goes nuts. It's really like the whole Crowley stuff could have just been a film by itself.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it gets intense. Yeah. And then it ends and I'm just like, no, where's the rest of it? That's good though. That's what you want, right? That's what you want the viewer to do. So what did the owner say about the cattle circling the house like that? Had they ever done anything like this?
She said that was never happened. She had to get the hand out there, like the ranch hand, and he had to catch all these cattle. And it's pretty dangerous. These are big cows, and they're running. They're not just walking around the house. They're actually running. You know, they had to get them out, and she was like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And since then, she's been like ghost hunting with me, and we've actually seen some... We've actually had some stuff fly across the house while we were in it, you know, since then. So we had to like, because she had her kids with her, and like these things start flying across the room and they're hitting the wall and stuff. It's like, yo, hey, we got to get your kids out here. I don't want nobody to get hurt.
These are like human shaped deals, or?
I've never seen nothing. I haven't. I've seen lights, but I've never seen nothing like a shadow or anything. But other people talk about apparitions that are just plain as day, you know. But another thing is, and we'll show some of that in the second film, is like while we were there, my buddy takes a picture of the house, and in one of the windows is a face that looks eerily similar to his mother, who's been dead for years. But I don't know, you know, it's like, it's not one of these pareidolia faces. It's almost like somebody put a picture of somebody up there in a window. Like, I mean, you actually see the face. So there's a lot of that goes on. The people that work the place have talked about seeing either Native Americans walking around the place or, you know, the people that used to live in the house walking up and down the steps and stuff like that. But myself, I've never seen anything.
Was the entire team on board for each of these tactics that you guys were employing?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. Like, when you start talking Aleister Crowley, a lot of people turn away from that. And then some people were against the mushrooms for the simple fact that it may make us look like we're not serious. You know what I mean? I went with the whole aspect of, well, we are serious. That's why we're taking the shit. We're trying to see if we can have a heightened experience. We're not out here just looking to rave or anything like that. I wish the whole team would have been on board. It probably would have been better, but it's always good when you don't have people that are on board with it, because they'll tell you what they think, and that's why the doctor was there. That's why the doctor got there, because that doctor's also into all this stuff. He knows a lot about psychedelics, but he also knows a lot about the afterlife and stuff like that. And he's an actual PhD, so, you know, medical doctor. And so we felt it, in case something happened to somebody, we'd have somebody on set. And then we can also get his opinions on things, because when he gives his opinion on what we're doing, he makes it sound really like, you guys shouldn't do this at all. Like, stop. You know?
Yeah, he definitely was not feeling that. And he let you know very plainly that that's how he felt. There was a line, and I don't know if it's anything you even want to get into, or if it means anything, maybe we already covered it, but I heard the line, maybe Falconer was right. What did that mean?
Falconer stated that he didn't believe anything was in the park anymore. Right? Because all these things with the way we did the edit, because it's basically, the film is, you're flipping through a graphic novel. You're getting to see a comic book come to life. It was kind of it was like, for our creep show, we love creep show growing up. So we're like, hey, and nobody really does that. Let's just, you know, kind of like a tribute to creep show. Like, the next film would be something completely different, the next series. Like, this is a 3-part series, so it's all gonna be comic book. But anyways, so the stories bounce around. Like, you're flipping through the pages in a comic book will stay with a certain segment for a little bit, switch to the next one. And so some of the stuff, nothing's linear. Like, because this was over a week's worth of time, and you're seeing stuff we did one night versus stuff we did another night, then stuff we did another night. You know what I mean? It's not like we drove up and this just went linear. Here's what we did at 2:00. It's what we did at 5:00. And we did that to kind of keep the action up, you know, because attention spans are waning in this day and age with TikTok and whatnot. So right when you get to the point where you're really getting into it, we switch and go to another segment. And Falconer tells us, when we interview him, he goes, I don't believe they're in the park anymore. I was like, we're going to try it anyways. You know what I mean? So that's why you'll hear, maybe Falconer was right. Maybe they are north of here, which would put them right around Crowley. So that was, that's what that was about.
I know. So obviously there's wildlife sanctuaries in this very area. It is in and of itself one, but what about the land around it? Is there a lot of hunting going around the land there?
No. The hunting parks are kind of above where the Myakka River starts. Now, of course, you can hunt private land all you want to, so you do have some of that, but you don't have like a public hunting spot where you get all this traffic and all these people are hunting or running dogs or something like that. But a lot of these places in Myakka are like 5,000 plus ranches. You know what I mean? So the game never really gets any pressure from humans, as opposed like where a national forest would, like during hunting season. So that kind of helps out. You know, you're able to surprise some things at times. You know, but everything's just like huge tracks. And once again, you don't get on this property unless you know somebody. So that kind of really stops a whole lot of people from being in and around the woods there.
Hey, you know, at least you weren't given RPG bath salts and he was trying to eat your faces off or something, you know?
Yeah, right.
Can always get worse.
Saying he was the perfect person for the mushrooms because we all had to stay focused. Like, you couldn't have two people on mushrooms.
Right.
Because, like, RPG was in the yard playing ghost piano for a minute. You know, like, his arms are going, arr, arr, arr. I'm like, what in the world? We're just standing there watching him.
Yeah.
Like, I guess it's kicking in. It's about time to start, yeah.
You're like, yeah, time to go downstairs, start reading. Yeah, it gets intense, man. No, but speaking of Creepshow, the Raft episode, I think, might be one of my favorite ones of all time. I mean, I prefer the written version. Of course, it's Stephen King, but I love Creepshow so much, and it definitely had that vibe.
Yeah, you know, I like the old one better than I like the new one, but I like the new Creepshow too. It's just, it's like, okay, so I've been on this Thundercats kick lately, and I was watching the new Thundercats that I hadn't seen. It was like 2012. It's like, you know, I don't really like this like I like the original, but it's still good. It's still Thundercats, you know, so that's why I like it. It's still Creepshow, and we wanted to like pay homage to it. You know, and really kind of, because most of the stuff through that show is like we're taking from shows that we like. Like the edit, the main idea behind the edit is 90 Day Fiancé. And I don't know if you've ever seen 90 Day Fiancé, but if you haven't, don't. Because you'll be glued to the couch and they'll play like 10 episodes. And before you know it, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. It's like, oh my God, what am I doing? Watching these train wrecks. But the way they edited that, you know, that's we kind of took from that because it's very addicting to watch.
That's funny. Howard Stern talks all the time about that. He'll watch The Bachelor. He loves 90 Day Fiancé. He's like, I'm like a damn chick. I love these chick shows. But he says the same thing. He's like, you go down this just binge and all of a sudden a whole freaking day is gone. But yeah, no, I, you know, it's a bummer because I had, this was years ago. I don't know what happened to it, but I still had like my original, the green cat, the massive green cat with the saddle on it. I had all that. I'm like, man, if I still had that, that would be incredible.
Yeah, it might be worth some money.
Yeah,
or at least just to put on your desk, you know.
Oh, I would definitely nerd out and just have it in the background whenever I do my live streams with patrons. I'd be like, yeah, I still got my Thundercats. That's what's up. All right, so moving off of the doc here for just a minute, because you and I spoke previously about the fact that, you know, I could bring this up and you'd chat a little bit about it, because the chant that you utilized at the Crowley Museum, it wasn't the first time that you've utilized this chant. You utilized it at the Wildwood Sanitarium, and some really dark shite ended up going down for you personally.
Yeah, you know, it's weird to me to hear some people talk about the Wildwood Sanitarium, because they have all these good experiences and good stories and happy stories. That's probably the only place I'll never go back to, just because of that night. Like, my anxiety was through the roof. So we are on this, like, me and Bill Brock are on this paranormal road trip. We're doing this live streams every night, and we're in Point Pleasant in the TNT area. And I do this Crowley chant to open this portal, hoping, you know, maybe we can see the Mothman. And all of our equipment goes nuts. It's on camera. It's like all pulsating at once. I mean, the spirit box, the REM pod, the EMF meter, they're all pulsating. You know, like you can hear the static break up when you're seeing these other electronics like pulsating. So we leave. We go to Wildwood Sanitarium, which I think is like Western New York, the next day. And we're going in there, setting everything up. We start investigating. And I hear Bill say, you talk too effing much. And then walk out of the room. And like, I don't know what happened, but I lost it. I put my camera down. I was like, go upstairs, I'm done. And I walked upstairs, sat there. And then he comes up there. I'm like, why would you say these things to me? Why would you say that to me while we were on camera? Like, I wasn't even talking. And he's like, I didn't say that because I wanted to bash his face in. Like, I wanted to hurt Bill at that point. Like, I debated it. You know, had we not been on camera, I probably would have punched him right there. I was so angry. And this place just kind of like played on my emotions. Because then we watch the tape back and he doesn't say it. And then now that's got this other part of me that's like, what? You know, I'm having a problem coming to terms with this. And we continue on. We're doing the spirit box session or direct link session upstairs. We start hearing a child's voice come across and it's like, close the portal. And we're like, oh my God, we never closed the portal. Well, it's not something we're really trying to do, but maybe we should, but we don't, of course. So I go to bed. I should be tired. This is like day 5 or day 6 of this. And like we started in Rhode Island, went all the way to Ohio. Now we're in Western New York. We're shot out. And I'm just hearing something going up and down the stairs. Dun, 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 dun. Just walking up and down the stairs. Bill's sleeping through all this. I'm just laying there looking at the ceiling thinking about why I haven't killed myself yet. Like really negative stuff. I don't think about killing myself. I actually like myself. So I love my life. And it was really, really bad. And then it got to the point where I wasn't sleeping and I wasn't going to sit there and continue that. So I went outside. I packed everything up. And then I went outside like as soon as the sun come up and just sat out by the car. And as soon as I walked outside, it was just like this weight was just lifted off my shoulders. And like, I'm crying. I'm like, I want to go home. I'm done with this. Blah, blah, blah. It was so negative. I've been to a lot of paranormal places and been in on a lot of, I guess, stuff that didn't get filmed, you know, like doing rituals or seances. Because if somebody tells me, oh, I can conjure a demon, I'm the person that's like, all right, cool, let's do it. I want to see it. You know, like that dog chasing a tire. I don't know what I'll get when I catch the tire, but I just want to be there to grab it. So, you know, I never had no negative experience like that. And when that happened, I was just, was done. Like I said, I don't know if I'll ever go back to that place, but it's weird because like even the owners were like, what in the world happened to you? And it shook me. It really, really shook me to the point I didn't want no more of it. I was tapping out, ready to get out of there.
You have any conjecture on why it affected you in that way?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I really don't. I think exhaustion probably had a lot to do with it. And not to bring Aleister Crowley up, but he would drive himself to this point of exhaustion before he performed his rituals, saying that he was letting down the veil in his head to where he could connect. And I don't know if that's what it was. I didn't find that out till after the fact. I think the exhaustion level really had a lot to do with just making myself susceptible to these things.
So basically like a perfect storm.
Yeah. And because I've always wanted something like that to happen, you know, just so you could know. And it's just like your mind's playing against you. And when it happens, you're not ready for it, you know, and I don't want to do it again because that seriously, like I never thought about killing myself before. And I haven't since. I hadn't before that. And I hadn't since. And like, I'm like, you could be home with your kids. You're up here playing games. You know, you're trying to be a child, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm saying all this negative stuff about myself. I'm like, oh, my God. Because then there's this side of you that's just like, get up and get out of the house. Get up and get out of the house. But you don't want to do it. And I don't know how to explain that to people. I guess it's almost like quitting cigarettes.
So like something was wanting, like it wanted to keep you there, so to keep propagating these negative thoughts.
Yeah, and that's not the first time I've experienced like not wanting to leave a place and trying to look for an excuse to stay longer. But it was really strong at that place, and all it was negative thoughts. You know what I mean? There was nothing really good, but it's like I've got this part of me that's like telling me, just get the F out of the house, dude. What are you doing? Get out of here. Leave. This ain't good for you. But then you're like, And I'll fall asleep in a minute. I start rationalizing, oh, you're just pissed off right now or whatever. But I had no reason to be pissed off. I was enjoying myself. You know what I mean? Like, we had people, which was strange enough, they were donating money to continue to watch. They were donating money. So, like, we didn't have to pay for anything. We were just, it was all going great. You know, it was a great time. And I'm with Bill. I love Bill. You know, Bill's one of my best friends. I love hanging out with the man. Like, we get along so well. And he's really into the stuff. And he's really serious about the stuff, too. I should not have had these feelings that I had towards him. When I tell you I wanted to bash his face in, I am not. That is not an exaggeration. I wanted to hurt him. And you always see these things on TV where, like, I don't know why, I just want to hurt you right now, when they're ghost hunting or something like that. I always thought that was, like, BS. And then it happens, and it's like, the worst part about it was leaving the house. You know what I mean? Because we didn't have to leave till that afternoon. But, like, we rolled out of there at 9 o'clock in the morning. I was like, we got to get the F out of here, dude. I can't go back in that house. But then we get down the road, and I'm like, oh, man. You know, I should have stayed. I should go back. We should just go back and chill and see what it is. And then you get back in the house, and it's just, like, right back in the same spot.
But Bill's saying you talk too much. You heard that. You heard him say that. You know it was him. That's why you got so pissed at him. But it's not caught on any audio. It's not on camera.
No, he never says it.
Wow.
He actually says something I didn't hear. He says, hey, let's go into this next room.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Yeah, you know, because then you're dealing with that. Like, you play it back, now I look like an asshole. And, like, now I got my friend wondering if I'm going to punch him.
Well, it is Bill. You know? I mean, Bill, you know, it's Bill's fault. Let's just go ahead and blame it on Bill. I'm all on board.
Yeah,
for that.
Right? But, yeah, playing that tape back, it was strange. And then to close the portal across the direct link was, you know, you play with fire, you're going to get burned. And I got burned that night.
So this is just a total aside. After watching the doc and you're utilizing the rooms for the mirror gazing, and I'm not trying to put any ideas in anybody's head, because I do feel like you, if anybody's going to try it, it's you guys, because it's great. You guys are balls to the wall. You're like, we're just going to try everything. Why the hell not? Have you ever thought about, and this is something that Joe Rogan has said he would try again if he could find another pure source. Have you ever thought about trying DMT?
That's actually in the next set of films.
What?
Yeah, so, like, okay, so with Outcast, we're going to go and investigate everything in the paranormal. We're going to do Bigfoot, ghosts, we're going to do aliens. And so we go to this guy named David Eckhart. And everybody should go look up David Eckhart, a lifelong abduction thing. He's had some weird stuff, like when stuff goes on at his house, the earthworms will come up out of the ground. We're talking thousands of earthworms. And this happened, I believe, when Fact or Faked was out there. They actually seen it happen. Very strange. And David will... It's weird because everything's starting to come full circle. Like, David showed us this thing called heavy water, and that's how he takes these pictures of these things. And he has a bunch of pictures that look like the Hat Man. But he claims they come through a portal and take him. And it's to the point that he don't want to go into the portal, that he keeps a taser beside his bed and he'll tase himself in the neck when he feels them trying to take him.
Holy shit.
Yeah, like, and so the dude's divorced. Like, his wife and his kids moved out of the house. They divorced because of this. Like, we got his ex-wife to come and talk on camera, and she tells, and his kids, they talk about it. His daughter, she wasn't there, but she had a story where, like, she woke up and there was just, like, 100 butterflies in her room. And the whole time they had taken her. She's sitting there playing with all these butterflies. And it was just something they played in her head while they did these, like, surgeries on her. But David got, like, he had rheumatoid arthritis real bad. Doesn't have it at all now. Claims they fixed him. So we go to his place and we do, like, a blood ceremony. I cut myself to do this, like, blood ceremony because we have this, like, occultist who claims that it's demons that he's seeing and this will bring him in and stuff like that. So I'm like, all right, cool, we'll try it. We do that, and then we also do DMT. But the weird thing about it is we left him with a radiation, like a gamma ray meter, and it records all the data. So like you download the stuff and it puts it up on like a graph form. And now normal radiation is like 10 to 20. When you're around 50, you're supposed to leave the room. His spiked the other day up to like 230 in his bedroom. And like, you can't manipulate this machine. I mean, maybe if you put it in a microwave, you could get that kind of gamma rays or that kind of radiation. And it said, contact your government.
What?
And so we're going to, yeah. So like, we got that one coming out after this. We filmed like a whole year's worth of stuff already. And then we've got a Conjuring House film.
Yeah, because Bill's working out there now, right? He's out there like every damn day.
Yeah, he's a caretaker of the place. So he's 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. He's got a killer job there. But in that one, there was this, the Nazis were doing this experiment where they would remote view or astral project and see what the Americans, the enemies, were doing. Well, the CIA did it in the 60s, and they called it the Gateway Experiment, or the Gateway Project. And they come out of the Gateway Project talking about, we live in an energy hologram. Basically, we had somebody rebuild that experiment for us, and we did it there at the Conjuring House, and I didn't think astral projection was real. But there's a place you go to called the Absolute. Read the CIA documents. There's like 30 pages of it. We experienced all of that and more. And the only problem you have with that is like you have an issue trying to prove it, trying to prove these experiences. So what we did is we exit interviewed everybody differently, without talking to each other, so that way we could look back at the data. And then like everybody's astral projection, the three people that actually did, three people didn't click out, three did, and we all have intertwining stories.
Really?
Very weird. Like I wish everybody in the world could try this experiment. It would change your life. Like I see my past, I see my present, I see my future. I felt like I went to heaven and hell all at the same time, all in 47 minutes. And like the weird thing about it is an audio frequency should not make you hallucinate and see things, but it did. And it was strange. We lucked across a guy named Jay Prather. He built the experiment, and like it's everything to do with like gematria, like numbers, like certain people couldn't be in the experiment because they didn't have a seat according to the math. It was really weird. We were in like a sepa symbol, which is I guess a pentagram, but a lot of the Egyptian tombs, there'll be these sepa symbols above like the king's tomb and stuff, and that's supposed to help you transfer into the next world. And so we were placed in the Conjuring House throughout, just in this big sepa symbol, and he's like blasting the audio, the Arecepo message is in there, and then it like comes out of these speakers. It's like basically trying to open a portal, but you astral project in the process. And I'm telling you, like, there's a lot of things I've done, but that was the only one that was really like, I felt for the first time, I felt okay with dying, because I now believe that there's something else. Before that, I didn't.
That must be, you know, because like, very nice feeling, very peaceful.
It is, you know, like Spirit Box and all these ghost tools, at the end of the day, they're just toys. We don't actually know that this meter going off means that there's ghosts in the area. I actually seen what my girlfriend and my children were doing. And then my children in Florida they were texting me while I was doing it, seeing like a fog throughout the house. And I'm like seeing my children in my house. I on camera hit my girlfriend up. I'm like, are you sitting in my spot on the couch eating some out of a can? And she was. She said, I knew exactly what she was wearing. She's sitting there eating pineapples out of a can.
Holy crap, dude. That's amazing.
It was strange, but, you know, trying to show that, document that on camera, because you're always going to have haters, I guess. So right. We're just going to have to do it anyways. You know, it's like the mirror gazing experiment RPG did. You're having to trust him that that's what he actually saw, because you can't see it. You're not on the mushroom staring in the mirror, you know, and he can't take a picture while he's doing all that. So it's just, we're going to prove it to ourselves, and we're going to figure out ways to prove it to everybody else. And that was another thing about the, you'll see a warning at the end of our film. It tells you, hey, this has been known to open a portal, turn this off now, or stuff can happen in your house. We're actually getting reports from people. People are sending us videos. Got about 5 of them. They've watched this thing in their house, and then stuff starts happening. So that's the last experiment. It's really not talked about. It says if you're going to say you're part of the experiment, but we figured, hey, if we can get a few million people across the country to play in this chant, maybe we can thin the veil across the country and start having these times like the 80s in the Bridgewater Triangle, where people are seeing pterodactyls and stuff like that, you know?
I played that twice, just full blast through the house, because I am like bear spray to the paranormal. I've been to Fox Hollow Farm. I slept in the damn basement. I've been a lot of places, but not that I'm expecting everything to happen every time I go to a location. That's not how this works. But I really am like the bear spray to the paranormal. So I'm trying this, and I'm like, oh, come home now. Like, let's go, Stacy, bring it in. But nothing happened. But maybe next time, because, you just never know. Maybe just like your time at Wildwood, it was just the perfect storm, and it's got to be the right time. Now, do you do anything to counteract something following you home when you go do these things?
I don't. I mean, people have told me how to do things, like cleanse myself. I'm not really big on it. I mean, if, like when we were at David Eckhart's, Kim was like, hey, I want to do a protection spell, an old Muskogee Indian protection spell for you guys. I was like, all right, whatever. But if I can get something to come to my house and I can clearly make the decision that it is something in my house, you know, come to that conclusion, to me, that's proof. And it's proof to me. And I've only been trying to prove it to myself because I want to know. That's my question. I want to know more about this reality. And my problem with it is we only perceive, 3% of this reality? So there's 97% of cool stuff going on that we can't experience. So I want to experience it, and I want to know that there's something else to this life. Like, if I had some doctors that were like, hey, let's do this flatliners experiment. We'll kill you off for 5 minutes and bring you back. If they guarantee they bring me back, I'm down. Let's see.
Tell me that's not part four. That would be a little stressful to watch, okay?
Yeah, I think we'd all go to jail if we did that, but it has been talked about. So.
I mean, you're bringing the movie Flatliners to life, you know, let's calm this down now.
Yeah, there's actually been discussions about that, it won't be a thing. It's illegal, apparently.
Yeah, only if somebody finds out about it, right? Only if it's on film.
Yeah, only if somebody dies.
There's another hole to dig. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
You know, that was, you just brought something up. And as far as the 3%, and it's something that I've brought up in relation to Bigfoot. And, you know, we as human beings, and I'm not trying to anthropomorphize, I can never say that name, Bigfoot. I'm saying this in relation to just a brain. We use X amount part of our brain. What if they can use 50% of their brain or 60%? What could we do if we could use that much of our brains? What would we be able to accomplish? Maybe we could talk telepathically, you know?
You know, I think the proof, the ways to do these things are in the ancient civilizations. Like, the Native Americans, the Sumerians, the Egyptians, they were all in tune to all this stuff. We seem to be the only, well, I can't say that because I don't think the Romans were exactly open to this stuff either. But we seem to be one of the only huge civilizations that this has always been a taboo. You know, how much better off would we be if it was never brought to us, like that this needed to be taboo? Because like magic back in the day, you know, the Egyptians and all that, they did all that stuff. They were constantly doing that. And it wasn't thought of like a pseudoscience. It was considered, if that's what you wanted, you did these things. And maybe there's something to them. Why not see if they're right, you know? But I think we'd be in a better place if maybe we did some of these things. But we live a very different life, you know? And
yeah.
And it's like people, like prayers. They get a prayer chain going. That's magic. Like you're focusing your intention on one thing. You know what I mean? You're just you've got Jesus Christ behind it, so I guess it feels a little more mainstream. But it's no different than me going out and calling to spirits.
Well, and that's why I like the doc, because it's open-minded, and the experiments you guys employ are open-minded. I mean, just the fact that you even, this was your storyboard, and then you guys actually did it. I mean, a huge high five, you know, no matter what people say. And I do think that people need to be a little bit more, or a lot more, open-minded. So the skunk ape experiments, I mean, when will part two be out, and where can people watch part one?
Also, part one is streaming basically on every pay-for-play streaming service, Amazon, iTunes, Google Play, all that stuff. Part two and part three, part two's done. It's just waiting on the last few music segments. And part three I'm working on now. It looks like part two's going to drop October-ish, and I don't know if we're going to drop part three with it. Like, when we did this, our distributor's like, no, hey, put them out 2 months apart, you know, and build. And then now our distributor's like, you should have put them all out at once. The data's showing we should have done that. We messed up. So let's put the next two out together. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, until the data changes again.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I haven't made the decision whether I'm going to jump on board with that. But at least part two will be out around October. It's hard to say an exact date because Amazon just kind of does what they want. Mm-hmm. Like we had an August 2nd release date for this one, and I think they ended up dropping it August 10th.
Yeah, isn't that nice? You know? You're like, oh, we didn't have anything planned or paid for any advertising, anything. Don't worry, Amazon.
Right. We paid a lot of money for marketing.
Yeah.
It's like our whole first like 8 days. The numbers, they just, I haven't seen them yet, but they can't be there because it was a complete flop, you know, like on that. And so annoying. You know, it's like, just keep your word, dude.
Yeah, they're.
I jumped through all of your hoops to be on Amazon. I met all of your demands, and you can't even put us out on the day you say you're going to put us out on.
Yeah, they are incredibly frustrating. But the problem is they're the massive 8 million pound elephant, and you have to deal with them. You have to do it. You can't just be like, well, screw you, Amazon, we're just gonna go over here. No, can't do that.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, the other two, the first one's kind of the setup, the walk into, you do get left hanging. The second one, you get left hanging again, but you do get to see evidence before you get left hanging in a different way. So
well, I'm excited.
You get to see the conclusion to some of these experiments.
Well, and I will say, if part three is 2 months past, then you have December, and you know, people aren't well aware all the time that Christmas is just as damn dark as Halloween, if not darker, when you really look into it. So that might work out really well.
One of these days, I'm going to make a Krampus film.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to make some kind of Christmas, like, paranormal thing. The snow always creeps me out, but then again, I'm from the jungle, so.
Yeah, you're in Florida. You're like me. I'm like, I don't need no snow.
No, right?
No, thank you. Well, Stacy, thank you so much for your time. It has been a pleasure to finally have you on.
Yeah, hey, seriously, thank you so much. I can check this one off the list too now. The ones I wanted to do that I have now completed.
Yeah, but now you're screwed because now it's like, all right, you better get in contact with me when part two comes out and it's time to promote.
Oh, I for sure will. It's great talking to you. I love the conversation. So we'll see who's the one that's screwed because you're going to be like, oh my God, this guy's making so many films. He keeps hitting me up.
This guy again. Block. No, just kidding. Well, no, thank you so much, Stacy.
All right. You have a good day.
You too.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bark. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you you are now. But nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes. Consulting our memories. But then there's a real evil, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are.
Thank you.
where he says, when you settle down in the train to read your newspaper and so on, you are not the same person who a little while ago left the platform. If you think you are linking your moments up in the chain. And this is what binds you to the wheel of birth and death. But when you know that every moment in which you are is the only moment, this comes into Zen. A master will say to somebody, now get up and walk across the room. And he comes back and he says, where are your footprints? They've gone. So where are you? Who are you? When we are asked who we are, we usually give a kind of recitation of a history.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.